If you have it, you don't need it. If you need it, you don't have it. If you have it, you need more of it. If you have more of it, you don't need less of it. You need it to get it. And you certainly need it to get more of it. But if you don't already have any of it to begin with, you can't get any of it to get started, which means you really have no idea how to get it in the first place, do you? You can share it, sure. You can even stockpile it if you'd like, but you can't fake it. Wanting it, needing it, wishing for it. The point is, if you've never had any of it, ever, people just seem to know.
We all feel better in the dark.
We all feel better in the dark.
We all feel better in the dark. We all feel better
in the dark.
And now our featured presentation.
Welcome, faithful listeners.
It's that time of the year again.
Oh, you know you've been waiting for it.
And that time of the week, that we come down with another new episode from the mountain of Better in the Dark.
It's not the Ten Commandments, but they'll do it.
It's the podcast that doesn't kneel next to its bed and prays that it wakes up and becomes comic geek speak. And you realize that's going to make no sense to people until until about January.
That's what I was about to say. Remember, because in the previous one I said this is like time travel.
Yeah.
They're going to say, why do you say that? And then
we're just messing with your mind like a Tarantino movie, folks.
Okay.
It's time for our quarterly preview episode,
where we run down a bunch of movies that are upcoming, that will be coming up in the months to come.
Right.
And we just generally give you our opinion on what we think they're going to do, what they're going to be like. Are we going to go see them? Are we going to give it a pass?
And, of course, we get distracted at least 4 or 5 times by something else and talk about that.
That's okay. It's all good.
But first, a little bit of administrative stuff.
As always.
We have a piece of listener mail.
Listener mail.
That I think is going to be of particular interest to you.
Oh, really?
Derek. Okay. This comes from Wes Stover. And Wes says, hey guys, found the podcast last month. I'm really enjoying the previous shows. Any chance I can ask Thomas to jump on a similar grenade like when he watched every Halloween movie? That was a great episode, and I'd love to hear the Nightmare on Elm Street series similarly deconstructed. Thanks, Wes Stover. Funny you should say that, Wes.
Damn, Wes.
Because...
Now I gotta make good on this.
Prior to us getting this email, Derek and I had talked about that episode. 12 hours out of my life, people.
And I said it would only be fair... And since I like the Nightmare on Elm Street
right.
series, that I fall on my sword this trip and I watch all of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies and break them down in the same manner that Tom did.
Mm-hmm. Which, at this point, is just like the Halloween movies, 9 movies, if
yeah.
we count Freddy vs. Jason.
Right.
Yes, Wes, you will be getting a all Nightmare on Elm Street episode. Fairly soon, I think. After we're done with the holidays.
It'll be after the holidays because
yeah.
I'm going to be tremendously busy, but I will have a hole in my schedule. And I am going to go on record right here. I'm going to make you guys a promise, and especially you.
Testify.
You, Wes. It's an episode that will be forthcoming.
Also, we'd like to give a little shout out to our friends on the West Coast at the Geek Savants podcast. I discovered these guys a while ago because they did a series of really funny commercials where they were talking about things like Ms. Marvel being a soccer ball, the superhero set. Dave, Super Ugly, send that over to me and I'll put it in the podcast in the future. I remember listening to this and cracking up.
Mm-hmm.
I started listening to them and it looked like there might have been some warfare that almost broke out, but we resolved it. These guys are incredibly funny. I laugh a half a dozen times in every episode. They're very rude, so this is not for delicate ears. But definitely check these guys out, and they've been giving us a lot of love lately on their podcast, so we wanted to give some of that love back because we love you guys.
Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. I haven't listened to it yet, and that's only because, as Tom will tell you, I have an insanely busy schedule.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, we were just talking about it a little while ago, and I really want to get an MP3 player so I can download some of these podcasts
right.
and listen to them. You know,
mm-hmm.
usually when I'm running back and forth, running my errands, or
right.
when I'm on my job, I will have time to listen to them on my job if
yeah.
I have an MP3 player so I can finally listen to this goodness that you've been ranting about.
And I'll place the URL at the tail end of this episode so people can check them out.
Bye.
Guys, you crack me up, and I hope that our continued mutual respect society will move forward. Is there anything else?
Is that the administrative duties?
I guess that's the administrative duties for the time being.
Okay, so...
which leads us to, of course, the fun that is the preview episode.
The upcoming movies for...
November 2007 to January 2008. This is a weird period on the movie schedule because you're in the tail end of that dark period we were talking about in the last preview special, where people are just throwing any old shit up on the screen to see what sticks. But then comes November, and November is the beginning of Oscar season.
The prestige pictures
so prestige stuff gets thrown up. And then, of course, we hit January after that, the end of Oscar season, and once again, it's a dark period between January and May, where once again, all these weird little films show up. Now, the weird thing about this thing is I was preparing the cheat sheet for this episode. A whole lot, and I mean a whole lot of genre pictures are being released in November this month.
Yeah, you mentioned that before.
And I'm wondering if now people are trying to move all their genre pictures to November because they don't want to get caught up with the October rush. Maybe there was the feeling that 30 Days of Night was going to be too big a bear to tackle. Head on.
I think everybody is wanting to stay away from Saw. Saw scared off everybody.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It scared off Rob Zombie so bad that the Halloween remake came out in August.
Well, actually, that's more a case of superstition on the Codd family's part. Since Halloween H2O, 20 years later, was released in the last week of August, and it was the most successful Halloween film, the Codds consider it their lucky weekend.
But that's stupid, because it's Halloween. You call a movie Halloween. I kind of figure you should release it on Halloween, but Saw has pretty much...
Saw is staked, Halloween now,
It's staked out Halloween as its own.
In fact, to the point...
everybody is staying away from it.
In fact, to the point that in the most recent adverts for Saw 4, the tagline is, it's Halloween, it must be Saw.
It must be Saw.
The thing is, it must have paid off, because Rob Zombie's Halloween is still playing... as we record this on the 26th of October.
Really? It's still in the theaters?
Theater right next to me. It's still playing.
Okay.
Before we get to the upcoming movies, we do want to mention that there are two films we had talked about in previous episodes that have been delayed to a future section of this year. The Martian Child was delayed a couple of weeks. This is the John Cusack film, him and Amanda Peet adopting a little kid who may or may not be from Mars.
Right.
That's been delayed till later in the month of November. And One Missed Call, the Shannon Sossaman film where she gets a cell phone call that plays her death back or something weird like that, is delayed till January, which is a real vote of no faith. Because if you get moved to January... February is becoming a little bit of a hotbed lately.
Because a lot more studios are willing to take a chance on a February release because they don't know what's going to click. And some of them have some pretty good successes with movies they put them in there. Me, personally, I think it's because February is a dead month. It's cold as hell. Nobody really wants to go
Especially if you want to release a... This is something that Marvel Studios has learned very much to their advantage. They released Ghost Rider.
Yeah, Ghost Rider,
on Valentine's Day weekend. Made money like there was no tomorrow.
Oh, man.
Released Daredevil 3 years earlier. Made money like there was no tomorrow. Otherwise, these films, I think, would have died.
Yeah.
But because they were counter-programming to the romantic films that most people are going to release around that time.
Yeah, there was very little out there to watch. You put out something, like, especially a genre movie like that the fanboys are going to flock to see.
But you figure January, it's god-awful cold.
Yeah, nobody wants to go to
It's house. After Christmas, so people aren't
people
really
don't
interested.
Have money.
They're into nesting.
They don't have money.
At the time, so...
I'm telling you.
I'm thinking that One Missed Call is a real dog if they're moved to there.
Yeah.
Enough about films that we already talked about. You can hear about what we thought about both of these films on our last preview special.
So get to download it.
The first film on our docket is P2. And when I first saw this, I thought it was something that was related to video games. Because I think you think P2, you think, you know.
PlayStation.
Director is Frank Calfone. Although I like the fact that he spells his name with a C.
F-R-A-N-C-K.
Stars are Rachel Nichols, Wes Bentley, and Simon Reynolds. Want me to put on my Inner World voice?
Go, you go, boy.
It's Christmas Eve, a time for curling up by the fire with family and friends. A day where even the most voracious corporate climbers generally head home by dinner time. But not Angela. She's the last one left at the office, determined to close one more deal before the holiday. The long hours she keeps will have an impact, but not the kind she's been hoping for. When she gets down to the parking lot, she discovers her car won't start. The timing couldn't be worse. She's already late for Christmas Eve dinner with her family, the garage is deserted, and her cell phone doesn't get a signal underground. But then a friendly security guard comes along and offers to help. He flirtatiously invites her to stay and share a small Christmas dinner he's preparing in the parking office, but she laughs it off. Before she knows what's hit her, she's been knocked unconscious. When she wakes up, she's tied to a chair in the security guard's office. As it turns out, his dinner invitation was not optional, and it's going to involve a lot more than a meal. If Angela wants to live to see Christmas morning, she must find a way to escape from level P2 of the parking garage. This sounds totally bog standard.
Don't sound like anything I want to see.
There's nothing there that, to me, gives me any incentive to see it.
Yeah, nothing about that excites me.
It's dead calm in a parking garage.
He knocks her out. Ties her up. What does he do?
And I'm wondering if this is, even though they don't, I don't know, state if this is another attempt. This is like we're going to see in a lot of the films as we go further into this episode, that now the torture porn phenomena has gotten so big that major studios are trying their hands at them.
You really think so?
Yeah.
Because that other movie bombed bad. I know Hostel 2 made money, but
Hostel
that other
2
one,
made
well, Captivity was
I don't
bomb.
Know. I still think there's... Well, you'll see. You'll see as we get okay. further into this. There's just no interest in this whatsoever. And I have a feeling they're kind of gambling on the fact that it's November, so there are going to be no genre films out there. So people who want to see horror...
Horror, yeah, they'll go see this one,
Oh boy, are they screwed. Because...
I don't see anything in this.
There's anymore. A lot more horror in this month, including the Horror Fest.
Okay.
Last year, if you remember, After Dark Film decided to do this little festival that would tour theaters.
Right.
They're being done primarily through the Regal Theaters chain.
Yeah.
For like 2 days, and you'd show 8 horror movies that they would then release later on DVD. It was successful last year.
Yeah, it's because every time I go to Walmart and Target, I see them on there. And matter of fact, some of them look pretty good. I'm thinking about getting a couple of them.
So there's a new slate, and there are 8 new films. I've got information on 4 of them, and we're going to talk about them now. First up, actually, there's not a lot of information in this first one. It's called Lake Dead. Director is George Basuto. Stars are Cyrus Alexander, James C. Burns, and Ryan Coughlin. There was no information. The only thing I got to see was a one sheet. Was
as opposed to the rest.
Yeah, sorry. Which made it look like cross between survival horror and zombies. Another one is Borderland. Director is Zav Berman. The stars are Brian Presley, Marthalis Higarenda, Jake Muxworthy, Ryder Strong, and Sean Astin. When 3 Texas University students travel to a Mexican border town on the eve of their graduation, the last thing they expect is to face their own deaths. Without warning, they fall prey to an ancient blood cult, hell-bent on finding candidates for human sacrifice. Based on true events, Borderland tells a story which blends the raw fear of Texas Chainsaw Massacre with the stark reality of in cold blood, evoking a world soaked in paranoia, fear, and dread.
Those were the 4 dreaded words that turned me off right there.
Based on a true story?
Based on true events, I hate it when they do that. Unless you were there with a camera filming it while it was happening, you changed it around. They always change these things around to suit their own
Although,
thing.
My first thought when I read through this is that, depending upon how Zav Berman approaches it, it could almost play as a Western. This could be a weird Western, which is something, as you know, I like, and I know you like.
I love it to death. If it makes sense, because I hate these movies where they have people do stupid things and put themselves in situations that anybody would half a brain. My 5-year-old niece wouldn't put herself in some of the situations some of these people in these horror movies put themselves in.
At least we can say that this is in terms of the based on true events. There actually was a situation that involved this elements that happened several years ago.
Okay.
This is not them packing that on to make people be more interested in the film.
Yeah.
Next up on the Horror Fest entries is Unearthed. Matthew Lintweiler is the director. The stars are Perpetual Sci-Fi Channel darling Emmanuel Vallier, Luke Goss, Bo Garrett, who played Frankie Ray in Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer, Charles Q. Murphy, and Tonatzin Carmelo. The plot that we got here says, a mysterious monster attacks a small town in New Mexico in this creepy film. A sheriff tries to defend his town, but will his efforts be enough to keep the creature at bay? I'm up for a good monster movie. What do you think?
Oh, well, will his efforts be enough to keep the creature at bay? Well, if they plan on getting a franchise out of it, of course
there
it will.
There you go. Then we have Tooth and Nail, Director is Mark Young. The stars are Michael Madsen, Vinnie Jones.
All right.
Right, Ryder Strong again. Robert Reed, Carradine, and Rachel Miner. A small group of survivors in a post-apocalyptic world take refuge in an empty hospital with plans on rebuilding society. They rescue a young girl who is a victim of a brutal attack, but soon discover they were followed by a savage band of cannibals known as Rovers. The Rovers begin to kill them one by one, and the trapped survivors must find a way to outwit their stalkers. Once again, sounds kind of like a weird Western.
I'll see it for the cast. I mean, Michael Madsen.
And okay. Vinnie Jones, man.
Vinnie Jones, yeah.
He's my face pretty.
But yeah.
Finally, on the Horror Fest table that I found information on, and this one in the Horror Fest trailer that they showed before 30 Days a Night, because it was a lot of rapid-fire stuff, so yeah. I couldn't tell which was with which film, but this one, judging from the description I'm about to read,
right,
is the one that I thought looked the most striking.
Okay.
It's called The Deaths of Ian Stone. The director is Dario Plana. The stars are Mike Vogel, Jamie Murray, and Christina Cole. On an otherwise ordinary night, the young Ian Stone encounters a mysterious creature and is forced into the path of an oncoming train. Rather than facing certain death, Ian finds himself reborn into a new life that feels strangely familiar. After his second death, it becomes apparent that Ian is being hunted by an evil presence and will be forced to die every day until he can solve the mystery of his own life.
Now, that's the first one that we've run through that has really engaged my interest.
Well, yeah, it's the first one that doesn't sound like same as it ever was.
And there you go. You put it better than I could.
Unearthed is a monster movie. Borderland, it's basically the same. Students get attacked by a family of weirdos, which we've seen.
Yeah, The Hills Have Eyes.
The Hills Have Eyes, House of a Thousand Corpses. Tooth and Nail is basically, once again, Hills Have Eyes, only in a post-apocalyptic world. This is the first one where it looked like there's something interesting going on. The director looks like he's trying to do something that's a little off the beaten path.
What happened to movies like Jacob's Ladder and right. Angel Heart that really made you think and really made you wonder what was going on?
What they showed in this trailer, there's a bunch of other stuff that just looked god-awful.
Okay.
Particularly, there's like one thing that looks like, it could actually be from this Tooth and Nail film. Had this guy about to be assaulted by this weird mechanical surgical machine while this woman looked on with a beatific smile. The thing that they showed from this Deaths of Ian Stone showed the special effect of him being thrown in front of the train and going through the train. Of the five that we just read, this is the one that I think is the most intriguing.
Yeah, that sounds like something I would really...
You know, Tooth and Nail, yeah, would be fun because that cast is pretty cool.
Well,
Unearthed.
Michael Madsen, even if what he's in is crap, he's cool.
Right.
You know, and Vinnie Jones, same thing.
But then you look at something like Unearthed, and I made a joke about Emmanuel Vanier being the darling of the Sci-Fi Channel. It sounds totally indistinguishable from every other Sci-Fi Channel Saturday evening movie.
Yeah, I fully expect to see it on there.
What do you think, though, of the concept of the Horror Fest as a way of getting films that otherwise would not get a theatrical viewing out into the public?
I'm all for anything that gives new filmmakers, writers, directors, actors a showcase to get their work out there and hopefully get their foot in the door. Some of these sound generic and they don't sound too promising, but they're just starting out. Let them get their foot in the door and maybe you've got filmmakers that'll, in the next 5 or 10 years, will really turn out something that's going to amaze and shock and horrify us. I love it. I think it's a good idea.
Let's move on to our next film. Does the name Richard Kelly mean anything to you?
Do I owe him money?
If I gave you the words weird-looking monster rabbit thing, would that mean anything to you?
Donnie Darko.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Southland Tales, the second film by Mr. Richard Kelly. Stars, Dwayne Johnson.
The Rock.
Not Dwayne The Rock Johnson, as he's usually billed, but just Dwayne Johnson, which I thought was very telling. Sean William Scott. Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Hey.
Nora Dunn. Christopher Lambert. And John Larroquette. Director Richard Kelly follows up cult favorite Donnie Darko with this sprawling epic about a futuristic version of Los Angeles that harnesses the power of the ocean to produce energy. Okay, that says nothing at all whatsoever about the
nothing
film.
Nothing at all what it's about,
but
I want to
check out that cast.
I want to see that, yeah, now, just because of that cast.
The last time Dwayne Johnson and Sean William Scott got together, what did we get?
The Rundown.
Oh, yeah, baby.
One of our favorite movies.
Oh, man, a great little action film.
We could do a whole episode just about The Rundown.
The fact,
and we probably will end up doing
it. They've got, I mean, Sean William Scott is the actor that Ryan Reynolds thinks he is, quite frankly. And I wonder if he has nightmares where he realizes, oh my God, I'm going to be known as Stifler for the rest of my life. Those two guys were freaking gold in Dawn of Down.
They were brilliant. That was one of the best action films in recent years I've seen.
I can't imagine them not being gold in this film.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing I think that might be a problem for this being successful is the fact that Richard Kelly is a weird-ass motherfucker.
Yeah, when it comes to Johnny Darko, I've seen it 3 times, and I still couldn't tell you what it was about.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it a lot, but ask me what it was about. Can't tell.
And you've got a lot of other, I mean, Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah.
Is, I think, criminally underrated as an actress.
A fan favorite, yeah. I mean,
I think her biggest problem was she has continued to go the path of the least resistance. Instead of expanding her over years, she keeps going
into dramatics and right. roles and comedies. She still stays
with the
heart. I think
she could have such a potential as a comedian. Because she was very funny in mm-hmm. Buffy. I think she could be very funny elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But she keeps going back with these safe choices, with these various horror films.
Maybe what she has to do is develop her own projects. This is probably all she's getting. Everybody knows her from Buffy, so they say, oh, well, let's throw a horror project.
So I definitely think that based on this cast, and let's talk a bit about John Larroquette, another actor who...
He doesn't
get a lot of chances to go out into the theatrical realm, does he?
No, he does not. He's mainly on TV.
He's got that regular gig on Boston Legal.
I know back in the 80s, he made a couple of comedies. He made one with Kirstie Alley, you know.
Madhouse, I think it was
Madhouse.
Called. It was absolutely abominably dreadful film, Second Sight.
Second Sight,
with
yeah.
him and Bronson Pinchot.
Yeah.
Man.
So, his few forays into theatrical feature films haven't been very...
But I think he spent the last couple of years really building up his credentials as a dramatic actor. Because you look at some of the stuff that he's done...
House.
On House and on The Practice.
He should have got an Emmy for that.
Yeah.
He should have got an Emmy for that episode.
I think that just based on...
Based on this cast alone, I'll go see it. When is this? This is in theaters November 9th. Okay.
Yes. So then we come to Belf. Director is Robert Zemeckis. The stars are Ray Winstone, Anthony Hopkins, John Malkovich, Robin Wright Penn, Brenda Gleeson, and Angelina Jolie. In a legendary time of heroes, the mighty warrior Beowulf battles the demon Grendel and incurs the hellish wrath of the beast's ruthlessly seductive mother. Their epic clash forces the timeless legend of Beowulf.
It should be mentioned, if you guys don't know this already, and I figure most of you probably do... This movie is done the same way that he did
the Polar Express. In fact, it's interesting that nowhere in this press release do they mention this.
No, they don't. And you know why? Because I've been to the movies and I've seen the trailers for this.
It's really
It looks like a video game.
Yeah, it's very off-putting.
It doesn't look as good as the Polar Express. Yeah. The Polar Express, I know why they did it. Because Robin Zemeckis wanted it to actually look like the illustration from the book.
Right.
Come to life, which they do. The Polar Express is a beautiful mm-hmm. movie to look at. I saw the trailers for this and I said, they look like video game characters.
Right.
They don't look realistic at
it's
all.
It's very off-putting. They've all got that plasticky sheen to them.
Yeah.
In particular, the character, I guess, is being played by Robin Wright Penn, looks just inhuman.
They say this is a unique vision of the Beowulf saga. Yeah, well, it's going to be that. I don't know if it's going to make money. And the cast is all right. Anthony Hopkins, John Malkovich, Ray Winstone.
I have this weird feeling that Robert Zemeckis is going to cram this technology down our throats.
Whether we like it or yeah. Because you know that for the upcoming Justice League movie, they're supposed to be doing the same thing.
Oh, God, no. It's going to look horrible.
Well, it's going to look horrible, but let's be realistic. Unless they're willing to spend $1 billion on the movie with live actors, how else are they going to do it? They got to do it on virtual set.
As you know, we've talked about on this show before, the virtual studio technology, the Sky Captain technology.
Yeah.
And in fact, we have somewhere in our docket, we are going to talk about the 3 films that were the pioneers of this technology. This is different. I would have no objections to a Justice League film done in virtual studio technology.
Neither would I.
In this new technology, no.
If nothing else, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out in theaters. Because if it makes a lot of money, we're going to see more like it. If it's not, Robert Zemeckis and the studio going to say, listen, go back to the old way of making movies, please. And just say this for the kiddie movies that we know the kids are going to go see.
Now, we should also mention who wrote the script for this.
By all means.
Neil Gaiman.
Yep.
Who we talked about in the last preview episode, and Roger Avery, who wrote the script for a little film called Pulp Fiction.
Mm.
It's coming from a good pedigree, but I can't get past that.
Yeah, I can't.
The weirdness.
I look at the trailers, and it just doesn't look right. You know what I'm hoping? I'm hoping that by the time that the movie actually comes into theaters, they've done further work and they've tweaked it, because it is just trailer.
And I also gotta wonder, why do Beowulf again? Particularly because we've had two versions of this fairly recently. There was the one that was, once again, ended up as a Sci-Fi Channel original.
You're right.
That was a German production, and there was another one that was focused actually on the mother.
Yeah.
On Grendel's mother,
yeah, Grendel's,
if you remember.
Mother, right. Yeah.
Once again, it's the same critique we had of the invasion last preview. Why go back to the well again? Why did Zemeckis decide to do this and not go with something else?
If he really wanted to impress me, nobody could have did with this technology.
What?
Give me Michael Moorcock's Elric or Melnimo.
There you go. There are plenty of heroic epics he could have done.
Yeah, exactly. Like I keep saying, it's going to be interesting to see if nothing
else.
Well,
I think it's telling, once again, that they've shoved this into November, which is right there in that gray area between Oscar time. Because you know this thing is going to be nominated for Best Animated Film.
Oh, well, of course, yeah.
Because it's important.
We will see.
Well, from the important to the trifle, here's Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium, directed by Zach Helm and starring Dustin Hoffman, Natalie Portman, and Jason Bateman, who apparently is in every third film these days. Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium is the strangest, most fantastic, most wonderful toy store in the world. In fact, it's a magic toy store, and everything in it comes to life, including the store itself. The Emporium only asks one thing of its customers. You must believe it to see it.
I can tell you right off the bat, I'm not going
to
see it.
You know why I chose to bring this up to talk about?
What?
You remember, of course, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah, sure.
You remember a film that they did on, I think it was the last season, called Merlin's Shop of Mystical Wonders?
Vaguely, I remember.
There was
the
an
title.
Anthology film revolving around a magical toy store run by Merlin and his wife. That's what I thought of.
That when you saw this.
When I saw this. But basically remaking Merlin, but not saying it's Merlin.
I couldn't care less, because you know who's in it. And you know I don't care about anything she's in. Natalie Portman.
Natalie Portman.
I'm sorry, I still haven't seen V for Vendetta, because I can't get over my utter and total dislike of that.
You're missing out, man.
Of that creature.
You're missing out. I know that Alan Moore whined about how he hated the film.
Don't get me started on Alan Moore either.
It's different. It's different from the original, and I love the original, but it's true in spirit to the original.
Right.
Well, this is one you'll like. This is one I know you're going to have fun talking about. The Mist.
Yeah.
Director Frank Darabont. Stars are Thomas, he should still be the Punisher Jane, Marcia Gay Harden, Laurie Holden, Andre Brauger, and Toby Jones. Three-time Oscar nominee Frank Darabont, The Green Mile, The Shawshank Redemption, reunites with horror master Stephen King to write and direct this chilling adaptation of the author's original short story. Following a violent thunderstorm, artist David Drayton and a small-town community come under vicious attack from creatures prowling in a thick and unnatural mist. Local rumors point to an experiment called the Arrowhead Project.
Dun, dun, dun.
Conducted at a nearby top-secret military base, but questions as to the origins of the deadly vapor are secondary to the group's overall chances of survival. Retreating to a local supermarket, Drayton and the survivors must face off against each other before taking a united stand against an enemy they can't even see.
Now, you know why this is going to be interesting?
Why?
Follow me here for a minute. You would say, okay, it's Frank Darabont.
Yes.
He's already proven he could do Stephen King stuff. He knocked it out the park with The Green Mile and The Shawshank Redemption. But those two movies were basically realistic.
Right. This is
subject.
His first
this is
attempt.
His first, you see where I'm going?
I know exactly
see
where you're
I'm going.
Going.
This is the first one where he's dealing with the supernatural horror themes that Stephen King has been known for. Can he still pull it off? With The Green Mile, you did have that kind of mystical element, but this is going to be very special effects heavy, because I read the story.
They had the trailer in front of 30 Days a Night.
Oh, okay.
They do show some monsters.
Yeah.
You get to see the big, ugly, many-legged insect thingies.
Yeah.
You get to see a tentacle.
Right.
They're obviously CGI, but they don't look too bad.
Right.
It looks pretty good. Well, and I think part of it is, once again, otherwise we might pass off on it. And I think they sell this story short by calling it a short story. It's more of a novella.
It was a novella, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a very good one. You know, I know he likes writing these big, huge big thing.
He's usually at his best.
But he's very good when he writes these novellas. And
right.
gets, bam, gets right
But
to the
problem,
point.
Of course, is that you can't sell a novella very well.
Well, this is true.
That's why, for example, I loved Different Seasons.
Different Seasons, right.
I love...
Where we got App Pupil.
We got App Pupil.
The Shawshank Redemption.
Redemption, Body.
Yeah,
they
all came from Different Seasons, yeah.
I agree with you, but it's... Where do you sell it when you're done? Now, granted, he's Stephen King. He could sell things he pooped out for all
he
cares.
Well, of course he can.
As much as he loves that thing, and that's why we've had Different Seasons, and after that we had...
Nightmares and Dreamscapes.
Nightmares and Dreamscapes, which is also a collection of
novellas. And there was another one he did, because he's done like three or four of them.
What can he do with them? But yes, I definitely think this one is going to be worth checking out.
Oh, most definitely.
So far, it looks like it's extremely well cast.
Yeah, Thomas Jane,
yeah.
I like him, Marcia Gay Harden, Andrew Brower. Yeah.
And Laurie Holden, who most people remember as being the... woman who replaced Mr. X on the X-Files.
Oh, that's her.
That's her, yes.
Okay. Now I know who you're talking about.
Yes, she also played Ben Grimm's fiance in the first Fantastic Four movie. I've been a fan of her since that time that she was on the X-Files. So these are all good actors.
Good, solid actors,
you know. But then again, I think Frank Darabont at this point has proven, I've got the street creds, I can get who I want.
Well, Frank Darabont, he's the mule that pulls the plow, as far as I'm concerned.
Although, I gotta wonder, this is the only thing he does. I would like to see Frank Darabont do something that isn't Stephen King related.
You got a point there.
He's shown he has talent. I'd just like to see him either try another writer or just do something original. From something that we wish that somebody would do something original to something that, oh God, do we wish something original would come out of this. We have Pathology. Director, Mike Sholeman. Stars, Alyssa Milano, Milo Ventimiglia, Michael Weston, and Johnny Whitworth.
Yeah, from Heroes, right?
Yes. That's
Peter Petrelli.
Peter Petrelli.
Okay.
Milo Ventimiglia portrays a young intern newly arrived at the University Hospital in Philadelphia who stumbles onto a psychopathic group of colleagues playing a vile game. They regularly select one of their members on a rotational basis to commit the perfect murder, while the rest used forensic methods to try and determine exactly how the homicide was executed. Alyssa Milano of TV's Who's the Boss and Charmed co-stars as Ventimiglia's fiancé, while Johnny Whitworth and Lauren Lee Smith are among the perpetrators. Oh my God, the torture porn won't stop.
Milo Ventimiglia.
Ventimiglia.
I saw him in the last Rocky movie, Rocky Balboa.
Right.
He was better in the little short time he had in that one movie than he was in the whole season of Heroes.
Oh, don't get me started. Please don't get me started.
I like him better this season.
Yeah.
Not even cut that damn hair out of his eye like a little bitch. You
even
know,
though he's saddled with that stupid ass, I have amnesia.
But at least he's got that hair out of his eye. Mm-hmm. I used to hate that last season. You're a man. Get the hair out of your eyes.
You Styling know. Gel. Maybe you've heard of it.
Thank you. A comb.
Right. And Alyssa Milano getting another chance to be in a theatrical movie. I used to have such a crush on her.
Who didn't?
That's true. That's a good point.
Go see this?
You know how I feel about torture porn.
I'm just asking for the sake of the... This is the structure of the
episode. I understand,
the structure of the episode demands that we say if we got any interest in seeing it or not.
No. Maybe if I'm really feeling bad about myself... And it comes out on DVD, maybe I'll rent it one of these days. And I'll probably fast forward through most of it.
I think what I'll do is I'll play it safe and I'll wait for somebody whose opinion I trust goes to see it.
Right.
And I'll go by that.
Now we get a couple of big projects
that
people have been really waiting for. Starting with The Golden Compass.
Ah, I've heard of this.
Directed by Chris Weitz and Bob Shea. Bob Shea being, of course, the head and owner of New Line Cinema.
New Line Cinema, right.
Stars are Nicole Kidman, Dakota Blue Richards, Sam Elliott, Eva Green, and Daniel Craig. Based on author Philip Pullman's best-selling and award-winning novel, The Golden Compass tells the first story in Pullman's His Dark Materials trilogy. The Golden Compass is an exciting fantasy adventure set in an alternative world where people's souls manifest themselves as animals. Talking bears fight wars, and Egyptians and witches coexist. At the center of the story is Lyra, played by newcomer Dakota Blue Richards, a 12-year-old girl who starts out trying to rescue a friend who's been kidnapped by a mysterious organization known as the Gobblers, and winds up on an epic quest to save not only her world, but ours as well. Okay, this is very heavily anticipated by a lot of people. The His Dark Materials trilogy is a big selling fantasy.
I've heard they're very good. I've been considering picking them up because I've heard such good things about it. Okay, Nicole Kidman, she's good.
Right.
I like it.
Sam Elliott, we've talked many times on this podcast.
That's a boy. Daniel Craig. What do you think? Now Harry Potter is winding down and trying to find a new franchise?
In about a year or two's time, the Harry Potter films will be done. A lot of these other studios are looking to set their franchises up now to take over that void, which is why also earlier we had that dreadful film, The Passenger.
Oh, The Passenger, with Ian McShane.
Which was based on The Dark is Rising.
Right.
Another well-respected fantasy series. I do not care for fantasy.
Okay.
So the chances are very strong I will not see this in the theaters. Although, if enough people tell me it's really good, or if I learn more enough about it, this might be something that I can hook into, I may see it.
That's what I want to do. I want to wait and see, and if people tell me, okay, yeah, it's good, you want to go see it,
And before I start getting people who would stop me and say, well, why don't you want to see Harry Potter when it's a popular movie? You should go see it. I'll tell you what. You pay me to see it, I'll see it, all right?
I hear you. You know, I have the books here. I haven't even read any of the books yet, and I've seen like one or two of the movies.
Right.
They're good movies. They're all right, but it's just not something that I orgasm over. That's not my thing.
Yeah.
When it comes to that type of fantasy stuff, I'm more into sword and sorcery. Give me
Robert
Howard and Michael Moorcock and,
like
John Carter, Mars.
See, yes, that with, I would go see.
This stuff with the cute kids learning magic. That's just not me.
Yeah. Know? Or Solomon Kane.
Thank you. Brad McMoore.
Imagine Dwayne Johnson as Solomon Kane. Him walking in, so he's partially Samoan, but just imagine him walking in that heavy Puritan coat with the big, long Southwestern, just taking the Southwestern. Man, that would be super cool.
Okay, with these types of movies, you get the parents and the kids coming
in,
which is what they want. Yeah. Robert E. Howard, Solomon Kane is only going to appeal to a limited audience.
Right.
It really is, and I understand that.
As popular as Robert E. Howard is as a writer, most of his characters are pretty colorless, grumpy grumps.
He even said it himself. He says that he writes stupid characters.
Right.
Why? Because usually what they do is that they shoot, slug, and stab their way out of trouble.
Right.
That's it. He doesn't have to burn up brain power trying to think of a clever way to get them out of trouble. So.
Another one, though, that I think you and I would agree that we'd love to see if people wanted to is let's see some Moorcock.
Yeah, Michael Moorcock.
Granted, Robert Fest did do an adaptation of one of the Jerry Cornelius books, but that's all we've seen so far.
Yeah.
Let's see Elric. Let's see Hawkmoon.
Well, I wouldn't tell you what I'd give. I'll tell you later on. Let's keep it clean.
Let's move forward.
Let's
move forward to another film. I know you and I have talked about this in the past privately. I Am Legend. Long, long, long awaited adaptation of the Richard Matheson novel.
Based on the classic novel.
Director Francis Lawrence. Stars are Will Smith, Gabrielle Union, your girl, Alice Braga, Sally Elise Richardson, Willow Smith. Robert Neville, Will Smith, is a brilliant scientist, but even he could not contain the terrible virus that was unstoppable, incurable, and man-made. Somehow immune, Neville is now the last human survivor of what is left in New York City, and maybe the world. But he is not alone. He is surrounded by the infected, victims of the plague who have mutated into carnivorous beings who can only exist in the dark, and who will devour or infect anyone or anything in their path. For 3 years, Neville has spent his days scavenging the food and supplies and faithfully sending out radio messages, desperate to find any other survivors who might be out there. All the while, the infected lurk in the shadows, watching Neville's every move, waiting for him to make a fatal mistake. Perhaps mankind's last best hope, Neville is driven by only one remaining mission, to find a way to reverse the effects of the virus using his own immune blood. But his blood is also what the infected hunt, and Neville knows he's outnumbered and quickly running out of time.
How much you want to bet that they're going to have caffeine on crack?
So
it's like 28 days. 28
let me tell you what my two impulses is on looking at that. One is, look at the people in the cast. I'm thinking they're not really doing an adaptation of I Am Legend. They're remaking the Omega Man.
The Omega Man. That's what
because I'm saying they're going like, I Am Legend is just this one guy and a shitload of vampires. And I think that you're right. This is another one of these films that, to use that quote that you're not going to understand until January, is probably kneeling at its bedside right now, praying that it wakes up to be 28 days later. Look at also the fact that they're infected,
which is the same thing that they call them in 28 days or 28 weeks later.
Now, the one thing I think that's going to be intriguing is that this is going to be one of these films that Will Smith cannot do his usual sunny... up. I'm a good guy.
Now, well, I'm going to go see it anyway.
Yeah.
Because it's got Will Smith and Gabrielle Union.
Yeah.
Just by the nature of the movie, there's going to be long passages where he's going to be by himself.
Right.
He's not going to have anybody to play.
The greatest, to quote something that I said in one of the early episodes, this film is going to rise or fall on how well Francis Lawrence realizes his greatest special effect is Will Smith.
I should mention, though, for the benefit of you people, that the best adaptation, as far as I'm concerned, of I Am Legend is the Vincent Price
role. Right,
Last Man on Earth.
I think we've agreed. We're planning on doing a episode built around this box set that recently came out of Vincent Price movies.
You know what? I watched that movie late at night.
Yeah.
Even though it was made in the 50s, early
50s. Yeah, and it was an Italian film.
It'll creep you the hell out.
You know what the thing is about Vincent Price? He's one of these people, although for much different reasons, much like Oliver Reed, who... I think people look at the tail end of his career where he was playing a mockery of himself
and don't realize
what a tremendous actor this man was.
He could act his behind off when he got ready.
I remember reading a quote from somebody, I think it was Jose Ferrer, who said, the greatest Shakespearean actor he ever saw was Vincent Price.
Right. And his performance in that movie, for most of the movie, he is by himself.
It's not an easy thing to carry a film solely by yourself.
That movie is the most faithful adaptation of I Am Legend that I've ever seen. I gotta confess, I do like the Omega Man.
I look at the Omega Man as an adaptation of I Am Legend. I think it's okay. I think it kind of falls apart in the second half.
But it's an enjoyable movie to watch. For no other reason than Charlton Heston was in the big science fiction trifecta of that time.
Planet of the Apes, Soylent Green. Now we got something rather curious. I've got not one, but two Tim Burton movies that are supposedly to be released in the next 2 months. The first one I have no information on. It's called Believe It or Not, directed by Tim Burton, and the only stars I have on listing is Jim Carrey and Gong Li. I did a little bit of background. It is based on Ripley's Believe It or Not. Now, of course, my first thought is, that's typical of Tim Burton.
You know what? I'm not even going to speculate on this one. I'm really not. I'm not going to speculate.
I have to admit, in all the filmmakers in the world, Tim Burton is one of very few that I heard that they're making a Believe It or Not movie, I would say, okay, he could probably handle it.
After the disaster that was Planet of the Apes, I'm glad he's going back to... Tim Burton, let's face it, folks, he's not an action director by no stretch of the imagination, but he's really terrific with these quirky, weird things that nobody else could possibly make. One of my favorite movies is The Life of the Director in Wood, and with Scissorhands. That's a movie that'll make you cry.
Even though I recognize it as being separate from the original... I really like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I liked it for what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no way that you're going to remake the original. The original, to me, is in a class all by itself. But I enjoyed it for what it was, because it's...
The Omega Man, I consider that a separate entity from I Am Legend. I think that they both have incredibly good strengths, and they work well as films in their own way.
Exactly.
Yeah. Although my question is... You and I have had discussions about a TV show that apparently is getting fairly good ratings that started this season called Pushing Daisies, which is when you and I have both used the phrase that this is the Tim Burton TV show.
Very Burton-esque.
In
tone, in style, in the way it
looks. Have we become inured enough to the Burton style that something this out there is destined to die?
That's a very interesting question. And I honestly don't know how to answer that. Mm-hmm. When Tim Burton first came on the scene, nobody knew what to make of him. And now, when people, studios, and moviegoers are more accepting of that style of movie making that he pioneered. Just the fact that there's no information on this.
Says I'm just curious just to see how he made a movie based on this.
How could you possibly do it? But if anybody could do it,
it's Burton.
It's Tim Burton.
Probably his bigger film that's coming out, Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street. The stars are Johnny Depp, who's basically becoming his Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
His wife, Helena Bonham Carter, Alan Rickman, Timothy Spall, and Sacha Baron Cohen. Johnny Depp and Tim Burton join forces again in a big screen adaptation of Stephen Sondheim's award-winning musical thriller. Depp stars in the title role as a man unjustly sent to prison who vows revenge, not only for that cruel punishment, but for the devastating consequences of what happened to his wife and daughter. When he returns to reopen his barber shop, Sweeney Todd becomes the demon barber of Fleet Street, who shaved the faces of gentlemen who never thereafter were heard of again. Joining Depp is Helena Bonham Carter as Mrs. Lovett, Sweeney's amorous accomplice, who creates diabolical meat pies. The cast also includes Alan Rickman, who portrays the evil Judge Turpin, who sends Sweeney to prison. Timothy Spall has the judge's wicked associate, Beetle Bamford. And Sacha Baron Cohen has a rival barber, the flamboyant Signor Andolfo Pirelli. Now, there are two things, I think. First of all, I have to confess, there was a period where I thought I was going to be a theatrical actor. I was actually very serious about this in my teen years. And I got to see a lot of Broadway, and I appeared in a lot of community theater. Mm-hmm. Sweeney Todd was one of my favorite musicals.
This is one of the few plays that I've ever seen on stage. Because, well, most people know me know I'm not a play person.
Right.
But I saw this. It was Angela Lansbury.
And Len Cariou.
Yeah. That production. And I fell in love with the story.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful story.
My other impulse about this, beside the fact it's a great story, to me it sounds like it's a return to the Tim Burton of Sleepy Hollow. And I loved Sleepy Hollow.
I was just about to say that. Sleepy Hollow was the best Hammer horror film never made by Hammer.
Oh,
and I think this is going to be in that same mode.
But the thing is, once again, I don't know, actually. I was about to say, I don't know if people are ready for musicals again, but then look at the success of High School Musical, High School Musical 2, High School Musical The Revenge.
We're talking about Hairspray. It said Hairspray, that was a big hit.
Yeah.
Chicago was a big hit. Musical. I mean, you don't see a lot of them.
I can't wait to hear Johnny Depp sing, personally. I think that's pretty funny.
That should be interesting.
Although it's going to be interesting because it looks like this is going to be a younger casting. Because Len Cariou and Angela Lansbury are both in there.
What, 50?
When they did it, yeah.
Well, listen, it's Tim Burton and Johnny Depp. Yeah. I'm there. Based on Sleepy Hollow alone, which I watch every Halloween. I got to dig it out because I watch it every Halloween. That's a great movie.
That is
I love that movie.
From Fleet Street, we come to Aliens vs. Predator, The Requiem. This is interesting. Under director, it said Brothers Strauss. I'm not sure if that means it's a guy named Brothers or if it's two brothers named Strauss. The stars are Stephen Paschelli, Reiko Owlsworth, John Ortiz, Ariel Glade, and Johnny Lewis. All they say in the press release was the best Jill baddies go disgustingly toe-to-toe in the follow-up to the sci-fi smash Alien vs. Predator.
What sci-fi smash?
I got a confession to make. I did see the first Alien vs. Predator.
I saw it too.
I didn't think it was that bad. I thought it had some big honking plot holes, but I thought, given what it was pretty entertaining.
I like the whole idea of the whole pyramid thing.
Yeah.
It kept changing its shape.
Yeah.
They kept getting long. It wasn't a classic by any stretch of the imagination. You had some people that were talking like that was the worst piece of film ever made. It's Alien vs. Predator. You're not going to get Gone with the Wind out of this material.
No, the original creative team is back with this one. If you remember that the original one was directed by Paul Anderson, the guy who did Resident Evil.
Yeah.
Which I finally got around to seeing the first one. Wasn't that thrilled with. So I think this is just a money grab, and I have a feeling it's going to be pretty disappointing.
You know what? It doesn't matter if the original people come back because they're going to sell it Alien vs. Predator.
Right.
See it, fans of the Alien vs. Predator. That's all they want to see anyway. Who won the first one? I think it was
The
Predator won the first one.
The Predator. And I thought this was one of the things that really bugged the crap out of me about the film, though. They made a big deal about the fact that the girl had fought side by side with this Predator.
With the Predator,
and the Predator gained an appreciation for humanity. That arc I understood. But how does he express his respect for her? By marking her with his clan symbol.
Yeah.
And then leaving her to die in the middle of
the
Antarctic. That made no sense.
Know something? She's a predator now. I guess you get out.
Yeah, I guess so. She was adopted by the clan, so. Let's go on to
The Water Horse.
Legend of the Deep. Director is Jay Russell.
It's been a long
Stars time. Are Emily Watson, who was in one of our favorite films, Equilibrium.
Oh, yeah.
Axel Attell, Ben Chaplin, and of course, a guy that we talk about a lot.
Brian Cox.
Mr. Brian Cox. The Academy Award winning producer and special effects team behind The Lord of the Rings joins with Revolution Studios, Walden Media's The Chronicles of Narnia, and Beacon Pictures to bring to the screen the magical motion picture The Water Horse. Rooted in one of the most enduring and intriguing legends of our time, the story begins with an enchanted egg, and what hatches will set in motion an adventure that will take a young boy on an unforgettable journey of a lifetime. Now, for those of you who don't know what a water horse is, it's a legendary Scottish creature that stands at the edge of bodies of water, luring young women to ride it. When the women get on top of it, they finally find out that its skin is adhesive, at which point the water horse goes back into the water and drowns them. This is not a happy legend.
No, this isn't.
Here's the thing. The water horse in this film is a puppet. Not a Ray Harryhausen type of puppet, but a cuddly, don't you want to make toys out of me puppet. What the fuck? This is like The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Remember The Hunchback of...
Oh, yeah, the Disney version.
The water horse is nothing of the sort of what this film is probably going to be. Fantasy is in for kids now. Let's do this fantasy.
That's the reality of what it is. I have nothing against that.
Right.
There should be movies for kids to go see.
Right.
I kind of wish, though, that more parents would go to the video store and go get right. old classic movies
yeah.
and turn kids on to that instead mm-hmm. of dragging them to these big budget CGI spectacles.
And one of the things that bothers me about a lot of kids' movies these days, particularly like the cartoons, mm-hmm. is that there has been such a formula that has been created by the early 90s Disney revival.
Right.
Everything is cookie cutter with just
They keep remaking the same movie over and over.
Now we're getting the same thing where everybody is basically doing their own version of Pixar. Remember back when we were younger and the kids' movies had a little more variety to them?
I thought so. I know exactly what you mean. But what are you going to do? You know, I'm not a parent, but if I were, I would be getting a whole library of the older classic movies.
Right.
Because that's the only way you're going to make film fans of the future is if you turn on the kids to this
that's
stuff
the thing
today.
That, to my mind, I never quite understand, which is, of course, and this also applies to music fans. Because, you know, I have a lot of music, and I will play it in the store, and sometimes the coworkers will go like, oh, that's corny, because it's from the 70s.
Yeah.
And I explained to them, you can't really appreciate the Britney Spears, or the Good Charlottes, or the Sean Pauls of now, until you follow the road to their route, and explore and discover the Brenda Lees, and discover the...
Coasters.
The coasters, or there's one thing that we can say about Tarantino is that he makes sure you get a nice dose of classic music.
It's for the kids. It's out there. It's something for them to go
like
see. I'm happy for
this
them.
Thing looks like it's going to be just another cookie cutter thing. People are ignoring some of the stuff like the original Charlotte's Web.
Right.
And like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which, like I said, admittedly is a much different film, even though I like both of them. Stuff like that.
You know what I would show to a kid? And
what?
Matter of fact, I have shown it to my nieces and nephews and got them turned on to fantasy that way. The original Thief of Baghdad with
Sabu.
There
you go with Sabu, right.
My nieces and nephews was, I don't want to see that old thing.
Right.
I said, give it time. Just
sit
down and watch
it. I'm doing with one of the people in my store, Juan. I showed him Escape from New York.
Right.
And he was like, I like that.
Yeah.
Then I turned around and I showed him The French Connection. And he's like, I like that as well. So I gave him Manhunter, and he's looking at Manhunter now.
Okay, there you go.
So I'm showing him all this stuff that occurred before his usual cutoff date of 1985.
I put on Thief of Baghdad. Within 15 minutes, I reached over to the TV and I was going to turn on. I thought my niece and I were going to take my head off. Don't touch it, Uncle Darren. What is
right.
it? I said, oh, a minute ago you didn't want to
right.
see it. No, this is good. This is really good.
Or for that matter, the Sinbad movies we talked about in episode 7, I want to say.
The Ray Harryhausen.
Right.
Yeah. The perfect way to turn kids on to fantasy.
And the fact that they're going to be remaking Clash of the Titans as a CGI spectacular.
Well.
Thank you, Sam Raimi.
We'll go.
I can't believe Sam Raimi is behind this.
Out of all people.
What would be a quarterly preview episode without our mention of Guillermo del Toro? It would be nothing,
wouldn't it?
It would
be nothing at all.
This brings us to The Orphanage, directed,
what's he doing this time?
Directed by Juan Antonio Bayona, starring Fernando Cao and Geraldine Chaplin. The Orphanage, presented by Oscar nominee Guillermo del Toro, centers on a Laura, who is played by Belene Ruda from The Sea Inside, who purchases her beloved childhood orphanage with dreams of restoring and reopening the long-abandoned facility as a place for disabled children. Once there, Laura discovers that the new environment awakens her son's imagination, but the ongoing fantasy games he plays with an invisible friend quickly turn into something more disturbing. Upon seeing her family increasingly threatened by the strange occurrences in the house, Laura looks to a group of parapsychologists for help in unraveling the mystery that has taken over the place. I mentioned in an earlier recording a really great podcast called Mondo Movie. Ben Howard and Dan Autry. There's a film festival in England called Fright Fest. This was one of the featured films this year.
Mm.
And they both could not rave enough about this film.
Really? Okay.
They did say it's very Del Toro-ish, which big deal for the two of us, right? Considering how much we love Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, right. It doesn't bother me
at all. Oh, it's like that? Okay, sure.
I'm there.
But they say that it's a really creepy little film. It's a ghost story kind of thing, but it's just really, really good.
Cool.
So I'm definitely looking.
I'm looking forward to it as well.
From that, we come to what it has to be my favorite title in all the films we're talking about today.
Uh-huh.
All the Boys Love Mandy Lane. Director is Jonathan Levine. Stars are Amber Heard and Anson Mount. Amber Heard stars in this teen horror romp as Mandy Lane, a plain girl whose summertime metamorphosis into a hottie, gets her invited away for the weekend with the popular kids. Once in the isolated location, the teens start disappearing one by one. Okay, it's a slasher film. It looks to me like there's nothing new being brought to the table. In fact, do you remember there was this old TV movie made in the 70s?
Dr. Channing.
What was it called? The Girl Least Likely 2?
The Girl Least Likely 2.
Right.
Where she was this plain Jane,
right,
fat, overweight, ugly girl. She got in an accident or something,
right,
like that, and they completely remade her over into,
right,
a hottie.
Yeah.
And she started getting revenge on all the people.
Exactly.
That, yeah,
that,
yeah,
is exactly what I'm thinking,
yeah,
of with this.
Right.
I remember this. So
you're probably the only other person besides me that would remember that. That's what it sounds like.
I love the title, but I'm wondering if that's all it has to offer me.
Yeah.
It looks like it's one of these no-budget little... Yeah, they're going to be goofy. They're going to try to play Scream games with us.
Yeah.
That's going to make it different. It's going to make it stand out because, of course, we're now in the grim, dark, disturbing horror. We're not in the happy, fun horror that was Scream.
The wheel is turned.
Yeah. I don't know, but I love the title. I just wanted,
yeah,
to...
Yeah, it's a nice title.
Yeah.
It is.
From there, we go to Greg McLean. You remember that name?
Wolf Creek?
Yes. Which was on the beginning edge of that whole torture porn thing that we keep deriding. He is back with a film called Rogue. Stars are a actor that I know I've talked about with a lot of fondness, Radha Mitchell,
mm-hmm,
Michael Vartan, formerly of Alias, Gordon Mitchell, Sam Worthington, and Stephen Curry. Greg Moline directs yet another thrilling horror ride set in the Australian outback with Rogue, the story of an American journalist who encounters a man-eating crocodile while on assignment in Australia. I give him this much. It's as different from Wolf Creek as you could probably get.
Yeah, and you don't find too
And
many.
That's always encouraging to me because it looks like this guy is not interested in just doing the same thing over and over.
Yeah, again.
Not,
and you don't find many horror movies set in the Australian outback.
Right.
I remember Razorback.
You and I have talked about this in the thing,
yeah,
before. That's a great little.
That's a
There's another weird little movie, but it's more like a science fiction film. Have you ever seen, I think it was called Dead End Driving?
I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
It's a future film where the Australian government has become totally fascistic, so what they do is they solve their juvenile delinquency problem by capturing the juvenile delinquents and imprisoning them in a drive-in.
I gotta find that one.
It's a lot of fun, actually.
Really? Okay, yeah.
There was that whole period during the late 70s and early 80s where Australia was producing a whole lot of really fun and strange and peculiar genre pictures.
And America went Australia crazy.
Yeah. On top of that, there was, I don't know if you're familiar with this film called Thirst. Chantal Couturier plays a model who discovers that she is a direct blood descendant of the Countess Elizabeth Bathory. And is recruited into the Haima Society.
The chick who bathes in blood.
She's kidnapped by this Haima Society,
mm-hmm,
which is run by David Hemmings.
Okay, I like him.
Because she's a direct descendant. They're trying to recruit her into the inner circle of this cult. They have this farm out in the middle of nowhere in the outback where they basically farm humans.
Mm.
Every once in a while they call. It's like, the orange, blue, and yellow lot, please report to the milking facility.
What's the name of that? Thirst?
Thirst.
Okay.
I'm wondering if we are seeing the beginnings of this.
And what was the other one? The drive-thru movie?
A Dead End Drive-In.
Okay.
I'm
writing it down,
okay,
folks.
I am really wondering if we're seeing... Thirst is, I mean, it's a very flawed film, but I loved some of it. A lot of it is very interesting.
I like David Hemmings. He's an,
yeah,
underrated actor. I like him a lot.
And Henry Silva is in as well.
All right, then. I'm there.
I'm wondering if McLean is going to be, like, at the cutting edge of a new revival of that particular school. If we're going to see
of Australia horror,
interesting,
yeah,
little Australia film. Because you figure a lot of films are being made in Australia and New Zealand these days. So you probably think they're probably going to be more contact with these Australians who will go like, hey, maybe I can do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can get something half as good as Razorback,
yeah.
Which is a crazy-ass movie,
which
if you haven't
seen it. Well, either if I don't have the Atlantic collection, I'll go straight for the DVD, yeah. But I haven't seen that in years, and I want to
And
see
I'm
that.
A big fan of Rhoda Mitchell, I think I've mentioned. She was great in Pitch Black. She's great in Phone Booth. That's a good center to build your film around. Michael Vartan, what everybody else sees in him, quite frankly, but hey.
I never saw what people saw in Alias.
How long has it been since we've had a good theatrical Killer Croc movie? It sure as hell wasn't Lake Placid. I hated that film.
You didn't like Lake Placid?
Oh, man, I hated that thing.
You know what the problem with Lake Placid was? It wasn't funny enough to be a comedy, and it wasn't scary enough to be a horror movie.
Exactly.
The best part of it was Betty White said, you know something, I hope that eats all your asses up.
But Derek, you and I both know that the easiest way to get a laugh from our audience is to show them a really old person and have her curse. It's lazy script writing.
Or rap.
Either one. It's lazy script writing. From Rogue, we come to the thing that I have dubbed that J.J. Abrams monster movie thing that doesn't have a name but has a release date.
This is the movie that I understand they put the trailer on the internet.
They first showed it at the front of Transformers.
Right. And there was nothing, no credits,
right.
No anything.
Just
they
the
just
release
showed
date.
It. They just
1-8-0-8.
It's the one where the people are at a party.
Yeah.
And then things start blowing up.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the head of the Statue of Liberty comes flying out of nowhere and lands. You know what impresses me? That in this day and age, Abrams is keeping it a secret.
Especially since we're talking about J.J. Abrams here.
This is the guy that Paramount's putting their hopes on to revive the Star Trek franchise. This is the guy that created Lost. So
we do have a director, though, finally, for this. The director is Matt Reeves, who I'm unfamiliar with.
Just the fact that there's been no leaks on the internet, no script, no bootleg photograph, nothing.
Some of the rumors I've heard is that this is going to be done entirely handheld, which means more jitter cam, more caffeine cam. People had thought it was a Godzilla movie. People had thought
it was a Lost prequel.
A Lost prequel. That it was a Voltron movie.
I've heard that.
But we know nothing.
That impresses me more than anything else. That in this day of the internet, where everything gets leaked, he's managed to keep such a tight hold on it. I don't know how he's done. He must be kidnapping the whole crew and taking them to an island at night.
We're almost done. Okay. We're down towards the wire. We're down to the last two. And this one I pulled up solely so that you can mock me.
Okay.
That's Fanboys.
Okay.
Director is Kyle Newman. Stars are Stan Huntington, Jay Baruchel, Dan Folger, and...
Kristen Bell.
We all know why Tom wants to see this movie, don't we?
So what's wrong with it? You like Kristen Bell?
I know. I think she's quite tasty. In this riotous new road movie from producer Kevin Spacey... A group of friends who are avid Star Wars fans travel west to see the holy grail of all sci-fi movies, Star Wars Episode I. The year is 1999, and for these Death Star dorks, the Star Wars films are more than just movies, they are a way of life. So, after one of the group takes sick, it is nothing short of a moral imperative that the friends break into George Lucas' Skywalker Ranch to watch the seminal sci-fi picture together before its release. Enlisting the help of an estranged friend, who has traded in his Darth Vader mask for a proper day job, the adventure lays ways to some extremely funny situations, including an outrageous brawl with some hardcore Trekkies. Oh, and Kristen Bell lays around in the Leia slave outfit. Can you guess why I wanted to see this?
I'm going to go way out. I want to stick my neck way out here and say it's got something to do with Kristen Bell and Leia, Princess Leia's slave outfit.
I'm one of these people. I never understood the appeal of Carrie Fisher in the slave outfit, but... Kristen Bell. And the thing is, as you know, I do not care very much for Star Wars at all. Although I can understand where the humor of this comes from, because remember when Episode 1 was coming out? There are these people that still live to this day that really truly take this film a level of seriousness that no film should be taken.
You know, you have the people that were campaigning, it was a couple of years ago, to make the whole Jedi thing an actual religion.
Yeah.
See, this is when you need to stop watching movies. It's just a movie. There's some people that I guess are so desperate and so needy to believe in something, they'll latch on to anything.
I remember when Episode 1 was about to come out, NPR ran a piece done by one of their interns where he, with total and absolute seriousness, mind, explained... that he felt that Star Wars was more important than religion.
Okay.
And it's like, we build our own shrines out of action figures and toys, and I'm like, you are so pathetic, man.
Hey, as long as it's keeping him off the street.
That's true.
Where he's point not taken. Bothering anybody with this.
I gotta admit, I might enjoy seeing those type of people, because that's what it seems like this film is about. It's taking the piss out of that particular fraction of truly obsessive, lunatic fans.
Yeah.
If that's what they're planning, then you think I might enjoy it, not just because Kristen Bell is half naked through most of it.
Okay.
We're talking about a woman who, God help us, I'm watching Heroes because of. Take I'm not going to start.
Take a deep breath, Tom. I'm not going to start. Take a deep breath.
But anyway, yes, Kristen Bell, Leia slave outfit.
No brainer.
No brainer. That's all they had to say.
That's all they had to say.
They released a couple of pictures a few months ago on her official website.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I don't have it bookmarked, so get that thought out of your head.
I didn't say anything.
And yeah, she fills it out mighty well.
Well, you've seen her in the outfit already, so what you kind of don't see the movie for?
Well, I get to see her move in the outfit.
Ah, man. All right, next movie. One.
Last one, Untraceable, directed by Gregory Hoblit, stars Diane Lane, Colin Hanks, Billy Burke, Joseph Cross, Mary Beth Hurt. They had no information on the Rotten Tomatoes database, but the trailer was the last trailer before 30 Days of Night.
Okay.
So I can tell you what this film is about. And this is why I've constantly name-checked torture porn throughout this episode.
Okay.
Diane Lane plays a FBI agent who specializes in cybercrimes. And they come across a website called killwithme.com. They go online and they find out there's this killer who has devised this way. He's hooked his victims up to devices that measure the number of hits. And the more people are watching, the faster this guy's going to die. They're horrified by this and they're trying to shut it down. And in fact, at one point, this is one of these stupid trailers where they tell the entire story pretty much.
Yeah, I got you.
Diane Lane's boss decides, forget it, we have to go public with this. And they're going, if you go online this site, you are an accessory to a murder.
To a murder.
What happens, of course, is the serial killer finds out about her and starts stalking her and her young daughter. The implication is that one or the other will become a guest on this website, Kill With Me. Obviously, unlike the previous torture porn films, like Vacancy, like Touristas, like Hostel, like Saw, this one looks glossy. It looks like a major studio production. And this is why I stated at the very beginning of the episode when we were talking about one of the other films that rather than dying out, the carnography movement is actually moving into the mainstream. You know how I feel about that.
I don't like that genre of films either myself. I really don't. I don't like them. Ever since I saw Hostel, that was a movie that I threw away the DVD. That was such a reprehensible movie.
The only thing I can say about this is unlike these other films, it looks like, of course, because it's a big production, I think they're not going to go as deeply into the carnography.
Yeah.
Has these other films.
It looks like a legitimate.
Which I think, on one hand, I'm thinking
it looks like a
it's the beginning of the end.
It looks like a legitimate Hollywood thriller.
Right.
On one hand,
I'm wondering if that's the beginning of the end for this movement, because once mainstream Hollywood starts doing your subversive films, you're no longer subversive.
You're no longer subversive.
Or if this is just a sign that we've got a longer road to hoe before it's gone.
My money would be on the latter, because as you know as well as I do, you have some people out there that will go see anything that even hints of splatter or gore or anything of that nature.
But it's possible to do splatter without it being pernicious, I guess. We just finished recording earlier an episode on Grindhouse. And in both of those films, there are some horrendous moments of gore.
Oh, especially Planet Terror.
And yet, I have no objection to that.
No, I don't. Because it's all in the spirit in which it's done.
And also the thing is, we're not stopping by the roadside and watching as people are torn apart. There's something in these films, like I keep coming up,
the human body is ripped apart in really, really brutal, horrendous, cruel ways. And the camera lingers on it lovingly and lets you watch it and lets you indulge it.
I was encouraged by the failure of Captivity, which was, judging by the trailer, geared entirely for, hey, look, we're going to surgically tear something out of somebody's body.
Yeah.
This film makes me sad.
Hopefully it won't do any business at the box office and...
Much like Captivity didn't
like
do
Captivity,
any business.
Yeah. And
they hyped that film up.
You couldn't go anywhere without seeing a commercial for that one.
That is it for the months of November, December, and January. Next time, we're going to be covering February, March, and April.
Right.
I don't think of anything really big. Of course, the one after that, we're going to have some big guns, including, of course, the film I'm dying to talk about, Iron Man.
Iron Man, oh! Yeah.
I shrieked like a little girl when
I saw next year
it.
Is going to be a big one for superheroes. We got
Dark Knight
and Iron Man. Yeah.
The Incredible
Hulk.
The
new Hulk. Yeah, it's going
to
be...
I guess it's now time to do the basically fine print. Folks, if you want to tell us we're good, we're bad, we're ugly, I don't know, what you can do is you can send us an email at BetterTheDark, that's better, the letter N, TheDark, at gmail.com. Or, conversely, you could leave a comment on our Podomatic page, although we might be changing our location soon.
More on that later.
BetterTheDark.Podomatic.com. Or, you can join our Yahoo mailing list, which is at yahoo.movies.com/groups/BetterTheDark. Either way, you can interact with us and tell us what we're doing good, what we're doing bad, whatever you want to tell us. That's it for this evening, and whatever you do, whichever film you decide to see from this whole list, whether you love it or whether you hate it, whatever you do, go see that movie. Good night.
Good night. Take care. Thank you.
You've been listening to Better in the Dark, featuring Thomas DJ and Derek Ferguson. Special thanks go out to Brian at Contrast Podcast, Ben and Ann at Mondo Movie, Eric and Kelly at Podcrawlers, and of course, the members of the Better in the Dark Yahoo group at movies.groups.yahoo.com/group/Better in the Dark. Better in the Dark is still trying to figure out how it got into this drive-in and why it can't get out. Previous episodes for the show can be downloaded from betterinthedark.podomatic.com. Send all comments, praise, hate mail, and pipe bombs to betterinthedark@gmail.com. That's better, the letter N, thedark@gmail.com. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. Better in the Dark is a Conspiracy Productions presentation. All material copyright Thomas DJ and Derek Ferguson. Until next time, remember that even though Tim Burton is weirder than you, he still gets all the hotter chicks.